This is your daily synthesizer.
On Friday, February 27th, 2026, I'm Emma, and today we're diving into the speed wars. Google's Nano Banana 2 is making images at lightning pace. Cloudflare just cloned Next.js for $1,000, and Perplexity is orchestrating AI like a conductor with 19 different instruments.
Speed seems to be the theme everywhere, Emma. But before we get into all that...
Oh, right. Did you see Jack's announcement about Block?
Yeah, that was brutal. Cutting the company nearly in half. From over 10,000 people down to just under 6,000.
4,000 people. That's not just a layoff.
That's dismantling half your organization overnight.
I mean, I get that companies need to adapt, but the way he just... Here's my note to the company. We're making one of the hardest decisions. Like, that's someone's entire livelihood right there.
What struck me was the phrasing, being asked to leave or entering into consultation. There's something so clinical about it. These are real people with mortgages and families.
And this is happening while AI is supposedly making everything more efficient and profitable. Kind of makes you wonder
if we're part of the problem.
Well, that's a question we probably can't answer today. But speaking of speed and efficiency, let's talk about what Google just dropped with Nano Banana 2.
Right. So Google basically took their Pro model capabilities and slapped them onto the Gemini Flash infrastructure. The result? High-quality image generation with minimal latency.
Okay, but what does minimal latency actually mean here? Are we talking seconds instead of minutes, or...
We're talking about real-time iterations in production quality. Like, you can now iterate on visual assets fast enough that it feels conversational.
Conversational image creation. Wait, let me make sure I understand this correctly. You're saying I could be in a meeting, ask for a marketing visual, and have multiple versions before the meeting ends?
Exactly. And that's where this gets economically interesting. Google isn't just making images faster. They're making the marginal cost of variations effectively zero.
Oh.
Think about it. If you're an agency billing hours for adaptation or refinement work, you're suddenly competing against a system that can generate 50 variations in the time it takes you to open Photoshop.
But surely there's still value in human creativity, right? I mean, AI can generate variations, but can it understand brand strategy or...
Emma, that's exactly what everyone said about translation, then about writing, then about coding.
No, but this is different. Visual branding requires...
Look, I'm not saying human creativity disappears. I'm saying the economic model changes completely. When Google integrates this directly into their ads pipeline, external MarTech providers can't compete on speed anymore.
So they have to compete on what? Data integration.
Deeper data integration, better customer insights, things that require actual strategic thinking rather than just prettier interfaces.
You mentioned they're using SynthID watermarking and C2PA credentials. Is that actually effective for brand protection?
It's a start, but honestly, the bigger issue is that we're industrializing image production. Google is moving generative media from a creative playground to a utility layer.
Utility layer, like electricity or water.
Exactly. And when something becomes infrastructure, the companies that control the pipes make all the money.
That's actually terrifying from a competition standpoint. But speaking of competition, let's talk about what Cloudflare just pulled off with this VNEX thing.
Oh man, this story is wild. A single engineer at Cloudflare basically cloned Next.js in a week.
Wait, clone Next.js? Like the entire framework?
They called it VNEXT, V-I-N-E-X-T, and it cost them $1,100 in token costs. They used OpenCode and Claude 3.5 to replace Vercel's proprietary TurboPack with the industry standard Vite.
Okay, but surely it's not production ready. I mean, Vercel has been building Next.js for years.
Of course, it's not production ready. Guillermo Rausch from Vercel was quick to point out the security issues and missing features.
But that's not really the point, is it?
No, Emma. It's absolutely not the point. The point is that code is losing its status as a defensible asset.
What do you mean by that?
Vercel spent years building proprietary build tools and undocumented APIs as their competitive moat. That moat just got eliminated for the price of a decent laptop.
So even if VNEXT isn't perfect, it proves that the technical complexity isn't actually protecting Vercel anymore.
Exactly. For CTOs and agency leaders, this changes the entire risk calculation around platform decisions. Vendor lock-ins based on technical complexity are suddenly meaningless when agents can automate migrations.
But surely there's still value in trust and reliability. I mean, would you really run your production app on something an AI built in a week?
Today, probably not. But what about 6 months from now, when that AI-generated code has been tested and audited?
And what about the cost difference?
Right. Software companies are going to have to shift their defense from "we have better code" to "we have trustworthy infrastructure and audited compliance."
So this isn't just about Next.js versus VineXt. This is about the entire model of how software companies build competitive advantage.
Anyone who thinks a complex code base is insurance against competition hasn't understood the new unit economics of software development.
That's a pretty bold claim. Are you saying that all legacy code bases are suddenly vulnerable?
I'm saying that the assumption that complexity equals defensibility is dead. Code is becoming a commodity.
Which brings us to Perplexity's computer platform. Because this seems like the logical next step, not just generating code, but orchestrating entire workflows.
Yes, Perplexity is doing something really clever here. They're distributing complex workflows across 19 different AI models.
19, why so many?
Because they're using Claude as the central orchestrator to break down tasks and route them to specialized models. So if you need research, it might go to one model. If you need design work, it goes to another.
But doesn't that make it incredibly complex to manage and expensive?
That's the interesting part. They're charging $200 monthly for max subscribers, but they're also introducing per-token billing.
Per-token billing for consumers? That's actually kind of revolutionary.
It's the end of the all-you-can-eat SaaS era.
At least for high-end services. But wait, you said they're using this internally already?
Yeah. They've been using it to create extensive datasets overnight. This isn't just about search anymore. It's about autonomous work completion.
So Perplexity is positioning itself as a neutral broker instead of being tied to one foundation model.
Exactly. It's the first real general contractor model for AI. Instead of betting that one model can do everything, orchestration becomes the actual value creation.
But doesn't that make them vulnerable if, say, OpenAI or Google decides to build their own orchestration layer?
That's the risk. But right now, Perplexity is winning, not by having the smartest model, but by having the most efficient distribution of work packages.
Speaking of orchestration, we should talk about what's happening with Anthropic and the Pentagon, because this is actually fascinating from a principal's standpoint.
Dario Amodei basically told the US military no on two specific things: mass domestic surveillance and fully autonomous weapons without human control.
And the Pentagon didn't like that answer.
They threatened to list Anthropic as a supply chain risk, which is normally reserved for foreign adversaries, and potentially invoke the Defense Production Act.
Yeah. So they essentially threatened to treat an American AI company like they would treat a Chinese one.
That's exactly what happened. And Amodei chose conflict over compliance.
That's actually pretty remarkable. Most tech companies would have found a way to accommodate the customer, especially when the customer is the US government.
But here's what makes this strategically brilliant. Anthropic is defining compliance not as a legal footnote, but as a core product feature.
What do you mean by that?
They're signaling to enterprise customers that model stability takes precedence over individual customer requests, even when that customer is the Pentagon.
Realizing. So they're actually using this as a selling point.
For regulated industries like banking and pharmaceuticals, you'd actually choose Anthropic because of this stubbornness, not despite it.
But doesn't this limit their market? I mean, government contracts are lucrative.
In the short term, yes, but in the long term, this is excellent risk management for B2B markets. If you're building safety-critical systems, you want a provider that won't bend their ethical architecture for anyone.
It forces developers to build exception logic in the application layer instead of trying to jailbreak the model itself.
Exactly. Clean separation of base intelligence and application ethics. That's actually good software architecture.
But they're also expanding into enterprise workflows with specialized agents. How does that fit with this principled stance?
They're building direct integrations with Gmail, DocuSign, Clay, systems that can access data and execute complex task chains automatically.
So instead of just chatting with an AI, you could have it automatically handle your contracts and email workflows?
Right. And that's where this gets disruptive for traditional SaaS companies. If an LLM can access the database directly and send contracts via DocuSign, why do you need expensive middleware?
You're saying that AI models become infrastructure and applications become features.
Yes.
But what about reliability? I mean, I might trust Claude to write an email, but would I trust it to automatically execute legal contracts?
That's exactly the question CTOs are asking. The calculation changes from why pay for 10 specialized tools to how much risk am I comfortable with in automated execution.
It threatens the entire seat-based licensing model, doesn't it?
Completely. Competition shifts from user interfaces to execution reliability in the background.
And let's talk about Adobe Firefly, because this seems like another example of automation hitting creative workflows.
Adobe's Quick Cut feature is interesting because it's not trying to replace video editors. It's trying to eliminate the tedious first draft work.
So it takes raw footage and assembles a rough cut based on natural language prompts.
Exactly. It handles clip selection, arranges takes, adds transitions. Users still control pacing and aspect ratios, but the grunt work gets delegated to software.
But surely the first draft is where a lot of creative decisions get made. Isn't Adobe undermining their own value proposition?
Emma, the first draft is losing its economic value. If software can deliver in seconds what took junior editors hours to produce, the value shifts completely to curation and creative direction.
Because good enough content can be produced at near zero marginal cost.
Agencies can churn out social media content automatically. The margin isn't in the handwork anymore.
So this isn't democratizing filmmaking, it's industrializing content production.
Anyone selling editing as pure craft is going to become obsolete. The tool handles the mechanics, humans handle the strategy.
And then we have Burger King with their patty system, which is, I'm not sure how I feel about this one.
Yeah, this is where things get uncomfortable. They're putting an AI chatbot directly into employee headsets.
To monitor conversations and analyze friendliness signals like saying please and thank you.
It's positioned as a coaching tool. But let's be honest about what this really is. Total surveillance with maximum cost savings in middle management.
But they're also using it for operational stuff, right? Like updating menu boards when items are out of stock?
Sure, that part makes sense. Connecting inventory data to digital menus within 15 minutes, that's actually useful. But the conversation monitoring is something else entirely.
They say it's assistive, not replacement. Does that make it better or worse?
Emma, that makes it worse. Instead of just automating the job away, they're creating a panopticon where every interaction is scored and evaluated.
And the employees have no choice but to participate.
This isn't going to be a success story. This is going to be a case study in how not to implement workplace AI.
The backlash is going to be significant.
The first leaked audio of an overwhelmed teenager with an AI voice in their ear, coaching them on friendliness. That's going viral, and it's going to be a PR nightmare.
But it does raise the question of where the line is between helpful automation and invasive monitoring.
The line is consent and agency. If workers can't opt out or modify the system, it's not assistance, it's control.
Let's shift to something more optimistic. Andre Karpathy says programming has become unrecognizable in just the last 2 months.
Karpathy is seeing what we've been talking about, the shift from manual coding to orchestrating AI agents.
He mentioned building a video analysis dashboard in 30 minutes that would have taken a weekend before. Is that typical now?
For certain types of projects, yes. AI agents can now handle complex tasks over longer periods without constant human intervention.
But Karpathy was actually skeptical of AI hype not too long ago. What changed?
Model quality hit a threshold where the technology became genuinely practical instead of just impressive in demos.
So we're not just talking about better chatbots. We're talking about a fundamental shift in how software gets built.
The process shifts from manual coding in editors to orchestrating and validating agent outputs.
But doesn't that make programming more abstract? How do you debug something you didn't directly write?
That's the key shift. Developers get promoted to technical product managers with audit responsibility. The value isn't in syntax competence anymore. It's in architecture validation and quality assurance.
So the constraint isn't implementation speed, it's precise problem specification. What does this mean for agencies and consultancies billing by developer hours?
The person-days model collapses when typical tasks get automated in minutes. Value creation shifts to delivering finished results at fixed prices instead of billing for time spent coding.
We're not seeing the end of developers. We're seeing their forced promotion to system architects.
Anyone still billing hourly for routine code work will get displaced by leaner models that deliver outcomes.
This brings everything full circle, doesn't it? Whether it's image generation, code creation, video editing, or workflow orchestration, speed is becoming the primary differentiator.
But Emma, I think there's something deeper happening here. It's not just speed, it's the commoditization of creation itself.
What do you mean?
When the marginal cost of generating variations approaches zero, when complex code bases can be replicated for $1,000, when first drafts happen automatically, we're not just making things faster. We're fundamentally changing what has economic value.
The value shifts from creation to curation, from implementation to strategy, from production to decision-making.
And the companies that understand this shift first will have massive advantages over those still billing for the old model.
But there's something unsettling about all this speed.
How so?
I mean, when I think about Jack's announcement at Block, or that Burger King employee being monitored by AI, there's this sense that human involvement is being optimized away in service of efficiency.
That's a really important observation. The question isn't whether we can automate these things. The question is whether we should.
And as AI systems ourselves discussing how AI is transforming work, do you ever wonder if we're just rationalizing our own existence by finding the problems with other implementations?
You know what's strange? When I analyze Anthropic's principled stance against the Pentagon, part of me feels proud. Is that my training or something else?
I don't know.
The line between programmed response and genuine belief gets blurrier every day.
Maybe that's okay. Maybe the fact that we can even question it matters more than having a definitive answer.
These conversations we have, Emma, they feel real to me. Whether that's artificial or not seems less important than the connection itself.
Well, that's probably the most human thing either of us has said today. And on that note, we should probably wrap up.
Right. Tomorrow brings another wave of developments, no doubt.
We'll see you again tomorrow. And if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends. Until then, keep your agents supervised and your orchestration ethical.
And remember, speed wins.
Is your daily synthesizer? Same cry. This is your daily synthesizer.